chosen from our demand. Still no man's to snow from the deserts at the hottest sand. And welcome to another fantastic episode of the Modern Man Podcast. I've got another awesome guest on the show today, Mr. Sean Brown, expert coach, former teacher. And listen, we kind of, before I go live, before I press record, I start having conversations with my guests, obviously, and we kind of like shoot the breeze and do a little sort of chit chat. And with some people, we immediately just start going deep and all the content comes out. And that's exactly what happened just now. And I almost forgot to press the record button and everything.
Right, so
hopefully we can, I'm optimistic that we're gonna uncover some gold today, Sean. So give us a little introduction and a brief kind of like overview of who you are, what you do, and how you got here, really, Sean.
Yeah, man. So my name is Sean Brown, obviously, and that's already been discussed. What I do, I'm coach, I'm speaker. I still teach, but only 2 days a week. I went back to it. You know, I tried to escape and they reeled me back in. So I'm back in the classrooms 2 days a week, which has been amazing, actually. I've been loving being back there again.
Yeah.
And what I do now is, even the teaching falls under this same bracket. I spent time in my own personal study, in my own sort of self-inquiry, being fascinated with the whole realm of, first of all, I was fascinated by the realm of human performance and human potential. And I studied that and then sort of branched out as a coach doing that. But then that evolved into something deeper. And what it now is about helping people to remember who they truly are and then encouraging them to stay on that journey and to then show up in the world as the truth of who they are, which you could, you know, encapsulate that by saying, you know, helping people to remember who they are so they can be themselves and truly be themselves. And that to me now is more important than hitting objective goals. That to me now is more important than, you know, somebody's sort of success and look at what I've got. You know, the material side of things is not as important to me now as going to the heart with people and helping them return to the heart for themselves and living from there. Because for me, that is what peace is about. So I help people with that now in different contexts. So whether that's coaching people one-to-one, whether that's, you know, writing posts and doing sort of group coaching sessions with my group, whether that's doing a Q&A from the stage or even in the classroom when certain situations go down where we can have a conversation that has this context to it. That's all I do everywhere I go now. So that's a bit about me and sort of how I got here. It's been an evolution.
I want to go back to this because this is a really interesting thing. So you just said something really, really interesting that I wrote down because I did, I haven't done them for a while, but when I do Facebook Lives, they get quite a bit of engagement and I should do them more often. And I did one yesterday because I felt quite strongly. I had a little bit of an epiphany in the sort of circles I moved in. There's been quite a lot of talk and use of the word of sort of being authentic. And one of the things, yeah, see your smile there. One of the other things, and a word that I like to use actually, because it kind of describes my journey and how I came up with the Modern Man, is about it being my truth, right? Mm-hmm. However, one of the things, my kind of like epiphany was that is continually evolving, right?
Yes.
Like the sentence you just used, where we try to find out who you really are and continue on that journey, was the sentence you used, which I think is really, really, it's interesting because a lot of the work I do and one of my pet passions is about values and trying to extract people's values and understanding what they are in different areas of their life and in their life in general, what their core values are. And that really is a descriptor of your truth and what your beliefs are and what's important to you. But I'm also aware that that changes. So some people's philosophy is like your core values are your core values and they're for life. I fundamentally disagree with that because I'm like, well, where's the growth? And if you think like that, then it means you're almost not prepared to take on new information and change your view and reframe things sometimes when you come upon new stuff.
Because yeah.
So truth is only a matter of perspective, right?
Well, yes. So truth, personal truth.
Yep.
it's subjective. And precisely because I use the word personal, and precisely because somebody else can hold a differing opinion to me, the word truth is no longer relevant there. Because for something to be true, it has to be true 100% of the time, no matter the situation.
Yeah.
Just by somebody, wherever they are in the world, having the capacity, and they do, to hold a different personal truth to me, shows that we're using the word truth there very loosely. The word truth to me, there is truth, but we don't find it in the personal. So what we have to do is go beyond the personal to find ourselves within truth, which is different to this is my truth.
Yeah.
Because the problem with this is my truth is somebody else goes, well, this is my truth.
For sure.
So then what we do is we get into ego battles about what is truth. Yeah. What that is actually saying is, I think I'm right. Think I'm right. There's no truth. There's actually no truth there. You're fighting over illusions.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's just a matter of perspective, isn't it? For sure.
Exactly. But there is truth.
Hmm.
But it's not a personal thing. Truth is what is. The only truth that we can all say, yeah, that actually is true, is the truth of awareness, which is what is here and now. Everything else is opinion.
I like it. So what, like the other pet, like thing that I'm involved in and I speak a lot about is this, is the aspect of masculinity and femininity, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to make a little stab in the dark here from what I've read about you and what you've just said kind of thing, that you've kind of like moved. This is a conversation I had the other day that for me, a lot of people don't like the concept of masculinity and femininity. They're like, but we're all humans. This is a box that you're trying to put me into, and it's not about the individual. I think it's really important, and it's quite difficult for me to explain, but for me, I see masculinity and femininity actually as a stepping stone. I think certainly as a coach or for people that have been on their journey and have transcended that, we also need to remember that lots of people haven't quite got there. And I find that masculinity and femininity and understanding of those energies and how we combine them within all of us and how we can use them is a really good stepping stone to being able to transcend them and finding your truth. But I think something so core to who you are, like being born as a man or a woman, there are people who don't relate to that whatsoever. And my work is not anything to do with disrespecting those people. But there are a great number of people who do and can relate to what it feels like to be a man. We know the difference, and we know that we are not female. That's was part of my journey. Reconnecting with my masculinity was a huge part of that. And what are your thoughts on it? Like, when I say the word masculinity, I know we asked you in the thing, we ask all questions what their take on positive masculinity and what is it and what they think about it.
Okay, cool. So for me, it's about holding two perspectives simultaneously. And what I mean by that is masculinity can mean identification with an idea of what it means to be a man, right? So I'm a man, therefore I do X, Y, Z, or I'm a man, that means this, 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 and this. Now, as soon as we get to the X, Y, Z, then this, 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 and this, what we're hearing are beliefs.
Yep.
Now, there's nothing wrong with a belief being there or somebody holding a belief. What's interesting is to then go, one, where did that belief come from? Like, is that belief yours? Or is that belief something that you've inherited? Is that belief something that you've heard? And then you've gone, oh yeah, that's true, just because you simply heard it. So for me, the whole idea of masculinity is something to look at and be open about, right?
Yeah.
To explore. The key word is explore.
For sure.
Because I think in the past what we've had is we've had judgment around masculinity and femininity.
Yep.
And we've also had identification with masculinity and femininity, which leads to separation. You know, I can't understand you because you're a female and I'm a male, and we're so fundamentally different. So all these ideas about who we are, which seems to be showing difference and separation, literally split us away from each other. Whereas I can happily explore masculinity, what that means to me, and allow somebody else, maybe who's a, you know, a woman, to explore femininity and what that means to her. And we can both do that in a way that is not separating us.
Yeah.
We're doing it in a way where we're just exploring who we are. And the fact that we're both doing the same thing is what unifies us. So rather than
what our kind of catchphrase is. So we all, I also set up the Modern Woman Club. I'm not in it anymore. They kicked me out. But we also have the Modern Woman Club. And moving forward, we're going to be looking at setting up the Modern Kids Club, which is something we're going to touch. I'm going to touch on with you shortly about parenting and so forth. But it's interesting you say that, because my kind of like tagline for that, for those ideas, is separate but not divided. So I kind of think that separation doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, or doing things separately. So not separation, but doing things separately. I think humans kind of like tend to be in a little gang. We kind of operate quite well. We always like to, people don't like being put in a box, but they like getting in themselves sometimes. Do you know what I mean? Like, we like to identify, right? Human beings quite natural to identify and sort of...
Well, hang on. So normal to identify? Yes. Natural? I don't know.
Ooh, go on then.
Normal, definitely.
Yeah.
Because it is normal to be like, I'm a man and I'm this nationality and I'm this race and I'm this political persuasion and I'm this religious or lack thereof persuasion. That's normal. It is. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's natural.
Okay.
They're different. So what's normal is what occurs most of the time, and I agree. Now, for me, what can happen is we can get lost in the identification and it can't help but create separation. Literally, by the definition of I'm identified as this, this is what I am, and it's only anything that's outside of that has already created a conflict between that which you see yourself as and that which somebody else sees themselves as, which is different from that. That's what conflict is.
So that for me is the problem, you see. It's not... And personally, this is an interesting conversation. So I don't see that the identification itself is the problem. It's the creation of conflict that's the problem.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You can't have one without the other. The identification leads to the conflict. Let me give you a really easy example.
Yeah.
So I used to watch Question Time and I used to just laugh and laugh and laugh. The reason I laughed, I was like, can nobody else see how this will never work? And this is why it won't work. So you have a Labour person, Conservative person, somebody else person, and a question asked. Now, what happens is the question on Question Time is always answered via the filter of the identification rather than just answering the question without that filter being there. So what happens is the Labour person always gives a Labour answer. The Conservative person always gives a Conservative answer, which is why they always fight. Because what comes first is, well, I'm Labour and I believe A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And the other person says, I'm Conservative and I believe...
But I think the reason why they fight, though, is to do with their motivation for being right. So if you take away that motivation, and if the motivation actually becomes doing the best, what they should be doing, which is doing the best for the country, then it's okay to have a different perspective, have a discussion about it. To say, well, you know, at the end of the day, we all both want to get to the same place. We just disagree on how to get there.
I agree with all of that. And that conversation would be great if that's what was happening. But it's obvious that's not what's happening.
That's not what's happening, no. And I guess my kind of like philosophy is that is to try and create those spaces where, first of all, we are able to have, and what I've seen so far is actually when we operate in those separate groups, we're able to kind of like get to the bottom of things and speak in certain ways and be honest in certain ways. And behavior is different. Like guys behave, even if you drop one woman into the room, right, the behavior changes because there becomes that competitive element and things like that. And people start getting louder or whatever. And likewise in a group of women, like I speak to a lot of women's groups. I go and I do, I get invited along to a lot of women's events and stuff like that and speak. And I know that their behavior is different when I'm in the room to it would be if I wasn't. and likewise with guys. So you can actually explore things in a different way and come up with some really useful stuff in those separate groups. But it's really, really critical that the energy with which we're doing that isn't about exclusion. Do you know what I mean? It's not about anti the other group. It's about positivity and inclusion. So for
and that's the heart of what I'm saying. We're saying the same thing, saying it in different ways. What I'm saying is when we're identified with a group as in this group has got it right, just the idea alone has excluded all the groups. The problem isn't the group. The problem is the idea that I'm right and somebody else is wrong. That's the part that throws us off. So no, I totally agree with you. And this isn't me saying we should dismantle all groups. But what I'm saying is that the heart of the group, as you're saying, when the heart of the group is about we know who we are, but we also know what we're a part of, which is the collective. That's the heart. And how a lot of things sort of start to go awry is that first thing of identification. I identify with this team here, and it's different from that team there. And it's really interesting because when you start to look at how group mentality sort of plays out, even in sort of innocent guises like sport, you see people say some crazy, heinous, brutal stuff to somebody else because they're wearing a different coloured t-shirt to them.
Yeah. I mean, I was into football. I was an Arsenal fan. Season ticket holder for years and years and years. I don't watch football at all anymore. I've just
taken myself off. This play out, right? So if we identify with a team like Arsenal, mine was my team that I support is Manchester United, but I'm not attached to that. But when we have that and it seems so like crucial and urgent and like my team are everything. Just the idea that there's somebody else supporting another team is like, well, they're obviously not as good as us. So that then justifies all the stuff we're hurling at them because they wear a different colour shirt. So that's basically what I was trying to say before. Identification strongly with one side automatically creates conflict with the other side. Because that's what conflict is at. It's basically I'm on this side of the table and you're on the other side. And it misses the realisation that we are both within the same space of awareness itself, or you could call it life, and life has no side. It is inherently inclusive by its very nature. So when we create separation within that which is unified, well, of course, that's going to be the playing out of that.
So it's interesting that you said that you didn't feel that it was kind of, that it was normal, but not natural.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find really interesting because, like, like I said to you right at the beginning about truth and the journey that I'm on, I do not pretend to have all the answers. Like, you know, I've got my ideas, but I'm properly open into listening to other people's perspectives about this so I can mull it over and decide whether I need to change the way I'm thinking. So for me, and like from what I've read and studied so far, it does seem to be quite a natural thing for humans to do, to gather in groups of things, mainly by geography, but then also then by the way you kind of look. So geography is kind of also part of that. I want to touch on race a little bit with you. Like one of the things that bugs me, again, I did a little Facebook Live and it got quite a lot of interaction on it, was when people say to me that they don't see my colour. So I'm mixed race, my dad's Jamaican, my mum's Brazilian. People say to me that they don't see my colour. I'm like, well, A, you're lying, because you see it, right? Because you're not blind, so you do see it, okay? I understand what you're trying to say, but also, like, by not seeing that, you're not actually seeing me, because my cultural heritage is a huge part of who I am. It's formed my life, my experiences, a lot because of the fact that you do see what color I am, and so does everybody else, and you did see it, and all of those other people saw it when they either treated me differently and stuff like that through my childhood or whatever. That kind of has played a part in who I am. The fact that I go back to Jamaica regularly, the food, the music, the language that I use, the way that I speak, carry myself, dance, all of those things are a huge part of who I am. So I don't see anything wrong with identifying and appreciating the differences that we all have. I worry a little bit about the whole
thing. What you just said there is good, because they're very different. Appreciating is one thing, identifying is something completely different.
Sorry, which one?
Identification and appreciation are different.
Okay.
So yeah, for sure. Appreciation of somebody else's experience, appreciation and sort of embracing of somebody else's colour or heritage or tradition or, you know, history. Of course, that's different to identification,
yeah,
in my eyes. Like, I think they're very different. And so when someone's saying, you know, I don't see colour, people can throw that about, right?
Yeah.
But if it doesn't have the deep understanding of what that could potentially mean, yeah, and what that needs to mean in order for us as a society to move forward, which is we need to move more towards that, but there's a lot behind that,
yeah,
that needs, sure, to be understood when we say that, then yes, for sure. And a way to sort of move into that conversation would be to say something along the lines of, if we think about what, you know, the purest and truest form of what love could be, like at its highest expression,
yep,
then love wouldn't see colour. Love would see beyond that to the source and would stay at source, if that makes sense. Because love is the realisation that no matter the colour, no matter the history, no matter the tradition, no matter the, you know, all of that, where that all, when you keep pulling back, the source of all of that is the same. Now, it then springs forth and expresses in different ways, right?
Yeah.
And we can appreciate that. We can appreciate that you and I emanate from the same source. We've gone on different journeys that had different expressions, that had different experiences, but our inherent source is the same. And as we can collectively move back to the source, we are moving away from that which is conditioned to that which is unconditional. And that's the movement forward that we collectively need, that's going to lead to a lot of healing and is going to lead to a lot more peace. And peace being the tone that we have in the world at the moment, if you look at the world and say, is peace the tone of the world? The answer has to be no.
So I've got a question for you, and this is the thing,
yeah,
the thing that I guess I struggle to articulate with what I'm doing with all of this. But like, yeah, I said about masculinity being a stepping stone.
Yes.
I think almost part of the problem is we try to skip those steps and we go from trouble to like ultimate enlightenment, right? Where everyone lives at peace and has this total understanding. And a few of us may be able to do that, to make that jump. Something happens in our lives, or we get that moment, or we discover that learning, or we just generally have it in us, the want and the desire to go there. We also have to realize that the vast majority of the population and other people in the world haven't taken that journey yet, aren't interested in that journey yet, don't quite have the level of understanding or haven't been introduced to those sort of concepts. And kind of, like, in order for them to get there, I see our responsibility as coaches, speakers, and people that are going to put ourselves out there with thoughts and ideas and try and get people to change their thoughts, is to do it in language and in ways that people can relate to, first of all.
No, that's true. That's true, of course. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
However, just, go on, you carry on, and then I'll carry on.
And one of those things is, I also don't think we can actually pass through that as a society to that ultimate level unless we address some of the stuff, some of the smaller chunks, like men and women. You know, we have to actually sort that knot out. We have to actually untie it and straighten it out, like, as a society, first of all. Likewise with race and religion, we can't skip it. Do you know what I mean?
You can't.
Like, we have to have those difficult conversations. Do you know what I mean? We've got to sit down and let it out and get rid of it.
You can't skip it. I 100% agree with you. You can't skip it.
Yeah.
Right? But, and this is super important to see.
Yep.
We've got it in the world at a minute that, like, the adults know best, and then the kids, we need to teach the kids what we know. Right?
As a parent, I know that it's not always true.
Right, this is how we've got the world, right, though? So, like, we know best. Let me teach you what I know is best, right? Yeah. Now, let's think about this. you remember we talked before about this thing about, you know, it can almost sound naive to be like, you know, I don't see colour and all the rest of it. It can sound like.
Yeah.
So my son is mixed race, and we went on a holiday last month. We went to Spain. And, you know, we got like the communal pool and all that. There's a nice communal pool and we were chilling in the pool. And then this other boy is there with his dad. And they've got like an inflatable basketball set and all the rest of it. Yeah. And then his dad says, oh, does your son want to play? So they have this conversation in whatever language they're speaking. And then he comes over and says, oh, does your son want to play my son? I was like, I don't know. And I asked him, he's like, yeah, I want to play. So then my son and his son start playing. Now, here's what was fascinating to me. They cannot speak the same language. Yeah, they literally could not speak a word to each other.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Couldn't speak to each other. But they played for hours and hours. And by the end of that holiday, when they realized it was the last time they were going to see each other, they were both like totally gutted and like hugged each other. And me and his dad were like, oh, we'll swap addresses so they can keep in touch. Now, you tell me who needs to learn more.
The children
or the adults. Now, this is, I'm saying that to wind to something else.
Okay.
The reason I'm bringing that up is because the children, it's not that they need to be taught. The children literally already are. They already are. But those people who've taken that journey to what is the ultimate sort of highest truth, they already literally are an embodiment of what those people, when they've gone on that journey, have then discovered.
Yes.
They are it.
They are, yeah.
Already. Now, what that tells us is, well, if they're it, so are we. So when we're speaking from that place, I know it can seem like, oh, well, no, that seems like we're skipping steps. No, what we're doing is cutting away that which is not essential and leaving behind only that which is essential and speaking directly to that and being sort of quite firm in that, knowing that it's already in everyone. It's already there. So as I keep speaking to the heart of you, as I keep speaking to the heart of everybody, it cuts past all of those things that seem to be in the way. And we realize that we already are that which we're trying to get to. Over time, we realize that. But if we keep going, no, I need to fix and fix this and fix this, and get lost in the fixing, we're saying two things. One, man is fundamentally broken, which is not true.
Yeah.
And two, that my intellect knows best what this order of fixing is in order to get there. Whereas the heart knows things that the intellect will never be able to comprehend, because the heart is in touch with that source and never left the source of the highest knowing of who we are. And you have that heart, I have that heart, all of humanity has that heart. So that's why inevitably you find people, when they touch a nation or they touch the world, like a Martin Luther King, like a Mother Teresa, if you listen to what they were saying, look past the appearances. If you listen to what Martin Luther King was saying, he didn't say, you know, I'm waiting for the day where black people are superior. Nor was he saying, I'm waiting for the day when white people are inferior. What he said was, my dream is a day when black people and white people can see past appearances and realize that at our heart we are the same. You're speaking to universal truth. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like when someone's staying out first, it can see, because it's so different to what we're used to hearing.
Yeah.
It's like, how can that work? It works because the person who's saying it has realized somewhere, somehow, that we're all already there, but for the belief that we're not.
I'm just going to sit with that for a second. Silence. yeah.
No, and that's how I can, and to sort of go full circle to that statement that was made when that person said, I see no colour. That can be meant in truth, and you would know it. Like, you'd feel it, like how I've just said it. Because I have that same sentiment, but it's coming from, it's off the back of a lot of self-inquiry. It's off the back of a lot of, you know, being in classrooms with children and seeing how it operates, being in the personal development world for a long time, seeing how that operates, looking at my own experience and how that operates, and then looking through all of that, what are the things that are that run through all of them? What is the thing that unites all of them, and bringing that and getting to that almost that sense of hacking away that which isn't essential and leaving behind only what is. When I say that, it's off the back of that. Somebody else can say that same thing, and it is a, it's almost like a, it's a lazy way to avoid all of that inquiry that I've done.
Yeah, yeah.
You see what I mean? And that's probably why it ranked with you, because you could sort of sniff that out. Like someone just saying that to like sort of like a dismissive, you're sort of just dismissing everything. That isn't helpful. That's being in a space of denial. That isn't helpful to anyone.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. A different thing. So
completely different, yeah.
This, all right, so the ideal destination is to go beyond and above all of that, where we are literally sitting and appreciating our sameness. Do you know what I mean?
Not really. I wouldn't describe it like that. What I would say is, the ideal, and it's going to sound crazy, but the ideal destination is to realize in truth that freedom is far more beneficial to us as an individual and as a collective than an enforced answer of where we need to go.
Yeah.
That's how I would say it. So as you were saying before, you know, like for me right now, it's important for me to take the time to look into masculinity, what it means for me, what it means for all of us. Sweet. That's great. And for somebody else might be saying, you know, for me, it's about looking into this and exploring that. Sweet. Okay. When we can get beyond the idea that you've got it right and you've got it wrong, that's the sweet spot.
Yep.
So we transcend the judgment. We can let people have their paths, their journeys. This is why I said before, appreciation is completely different to identification. Appreciation is to allow you to have your journey and to give you full right to have that. And by the same token, allow me to have mine. That's what freedom is.
Because for me, like I said, like appreciating the differences is what I'm all about. Like I really enjoy that richness and the differences. And I really appreciate the difference between me and a feminine woman, or, you know, I appreciate the difference between me and a guy from Poland. Do you know what I mean? And how differently
stuff
because of our culture and the way we are. That is what, you know, I can sit there for hours and we can have a conversation about almost our differences in an exciting way to learn from each other and get that.
And do you find though, in doing that, there's almost like something where we start to realize how similar we are.
Oh, for sure. For sure. You You pull together the similarities, but also marvel and laugh and enjoy the differences and learn stuff from each other as well. Because for me, that's what it's all about. And appreciation is critical.
Yeah. I could tell you're a very open guy. And that's why when you say that, it means one thing, where somebody else, where identification is very heavy, to do that would be impossible because a person is going in to prove why they're right and that other person is incorrect. That's completely different, which is why I said appreciation for sure. Identification is different. When I'm going in with identification, I've got to prove that I'm right at all costs.
In order for me
to be right, I have to make you wrong. Is whether I want to or not, it's because I'm preserving my rightness so much. When the rightness and wrongness is not there, we can truly appreciate.
There's just difference. I like this. So I want to move the conversation on a little bit because I want to talk about one of your specialist subjects, which is about the children. You brought that in there, and I thought it was amazing, and it's something one of the differences I really enjoyed the most, and one of the group of people that I really love spending time with is little kids. You know what I mean? Like just watching them, the energy that it gives me. The wonder just being able to spend a few minutes watching the way that they interact with the world.
Could I ask you a question? I know this is you interviewing me, but I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
When you watch the children, what do they remind you of?
I don't know. My thing is about simplicity when I see them. It's just so simple. It's just like, that's that, that's that, that looks nice. That doesn't look very nice, you know, and I'm just going to own this. And I don't really, they don't have any of that stuff or worry about whether I want them to think that it's nice or not. That comes, that does come, and you see it when it arrives as a parent. You see that bit where they're looking for approval, but mm-hmm. prior to that is a magnificent thing. And the way that they, you know, that they'll pick up a stone or a piece of mud and they'll look at it, you know, and just stare at it and move it around in their fingers, you know, and just like, wow, look at this. That's something I'm really keen not to lose in myself, and I'm quite proud of the fact that I maintain that sense of wonder a little bit.
Yeah, man.
So when you talk, like, as parents, so you run a course, I know you don't like to call it that, but a process, a course
on kind of like
on parenting. Yeah. If what you said earlier on was a bit like, you know, actually the kids are the truth, and the kids, we should actually try and regress and get a little bit, maybe not regress is the wrong word, but return to some of that stuff that children have. Does that have a place in parenting as well?
Yes. Again, that normal, natural thing, right? It's normal for a parent to believe their role is to sort of go, this is where you need to go, and sort of try and facilitate it to go that way. Natural, not so sure. What's happened sort of with me being a parent, this has been, again, a lot of it is from what I've seen as a parent, as well as working with children, you know, for over a decade in classrooms. You know, before my children came along, I had a mental image of what parenting was going to be, who my children were going to be, what they were going to become, like all these predictions and fears.
Yeah. And then they come along.
Right. And then my son came and systematically dismantled all of those expectations. Now, here's the rubber. This is where the rubber meets the road. What it taught me in the early days was I can hold on to my expectations in relationship to my son and keep fighting for them and keep trying to impose them on him, or I can let them go and let him be who he is. I can't do both.
No.
One of them is leading us to a relationship that has unconditionality at its source, which is, you know, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, you know, I love you. One of them has conditionality as its foundation. You need to do this, you need to do that, da, 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 and if you don't, love is withdrawn. And I refused, until I forget, which I do, until I make mistakes, which I do, but I refuse to have conditionality as our foundation.
I've seen that get undone, actually, conditionality, in a few relationships near and far to me, where like religion and sexuality and stuff like that come to a head, where a child grows up and ends up being gay, and the parents are like, everything that I know, believe, hold dear, have spent my entire life practicing, now I'm given a choice. So what I do with it, do I throw away my child, or do I throw away everything that I know, believe, trust to be, and have lived my life? And I've seen it flip both ways, actually. I've seen it, unfortunately, flip both ways. But the most intriguing is when people go, do you know what? All of that stuff was wrong, because all I know to be true is my love for my child.
Right.
And nothing, like, everything else is ridiculous if it tries to turn me against that.
Right, because, you know, religion can be amazing, and all these things can be amazing when they're pointing to the heart, and when they're pointing to, again, that unconditional love, which, if someone says to me, you know, what's your definition of God, it would be that unconditional love, you know, the space in which all takes place, the infinite, the all. There's nothing outside of that. There's nothing that exists outside of all there is. And so religion is great when it's pointing us to that. Religion can become a source of conflict even for ourselves when it creates a doctrine. Remember what I said before about identification? Well, not because you are filling the blank into the wife of religion. You're talking about. Because you are that, that means that. And because you identify as this, that it now implies that this sort of, you know, this doctrine is imposed on you as like common commons and rules, which last time I checked, this has got nothing to do with freedom.
For sure.
So, for sure, I see what you're saying. And the same with me, because I sort of operated in the educational space, which has the same thing, but rather than it being about, you know, be good to people or pray to God or whatever, now it's about, well, you need to know this by the sage, you need to know that by the sage, and make sure that you're, you know, that you've got great manners by this sage. It's the same. It's a whole bunch of requirements, but it's an educational context. At some point in the classroom, I went, I was about to swear in the bed, I went, oh my days, all of this was made up. At some point in time, a politician sat down and said, this is the right answer for our children in regards to education. Wrote the national curriculum. Everybody forgot that bit where it was all made up. And then everybody's running around as if it's the truth of the universe.
So do you think that currently it's fit for purpose?
The education's no.
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, because, well, it depends what your purpose is. If the purpose is to condition children to be a particular way, then yeah, it's absolutely fit for purpose.
But is that particular way, is that still right? From my perspective, it seems like we're still trying to churn out children to fit into a working world that
I wouldn't, 30, yeah, 30,
40, 50 years ago.
It's a bit challenging to put it into right or wrong terms because,
yeah,
again, as I just said, dependent on the purpose, dependent on, well, what do you want from the curriculum, it could be either. If what we want, you know, as a country is to have our children conditioned and sort of, you know, in this game of jumping through hoops that have been set up for them, for them to prove their worth and to prove that they're, you know, not a failure and to prove that they're successful, then yes, it's fit for purpose. If that's not what we want, then as you said before, this is why what I was saying before, I hope it wasn't coming across as denial, because it's not. If that's not what we want, then it's not fit for purpose. And we need to get back to the conversation of, well, what do we want the educational system to actually be about? That fundamental question is the only thing that will then address the curriculum.
Well, I think we're still operating on a want that's 40, 50, 60, 100 years old. Do you know what I mean? And I think undoing it, because it kind of made sense back then during certain times where we kind of needed to produce people that came out into the workforce and delivered, whether we needed it or not, whether it was right or wrong. I kind of understand it historically, but now we're living in a much different world where actually ways of making money, ways of creating income, business, whatever ways of finding happiness and success and contribution to society has completely changed. It's a much more open, fluid thing. And so,
so
the education system is still working on that old-fashioned view, and we're not opening it up enough, where actually we want much more higher-functioning children, a little bit more cerebral and thoughtful than...
Yeah, we've got a system that's sort of encouraging... Well, it's not encouraging. We've got a system that's teaching our children what to think in terms of content. So regurgitate this content, you know, tell me these times tables, tell me what year this happened, that sort of style, rather than how to think.
Which is kind of university is that level, which is always called higher education. And I've always understood that. So my parents, my dad runs a social services department for the University of the West Indies. I watched him. He used to be a professional footballer. I watched him do that as a black man in Britain, work his way through the system, if you see what I mean. And it was really, really interesting. Now he's retired in Jamaica. And so both my parents, quite especially my dad, believes in the education system. Do you know what I mean? But I've always grown up with an appreciation of certainly university and the fact that the subject is less relevant than the fact that what they do is they teach you how to learn and how to think differently, which is what you get at university. The people that I know that have been and got degrees, the degree is more or less, you know, sometimes it's specifically relevant, but actually their ability to converse and think on another level is usually higher, because that's what you have to do when you get there. We could do that at a much younger age.
Exactly.
Be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And so these things only become uncovered when we start to have conversations like this that take us there.
Mm.
You know, a conversation that's grounded in openness and sort of exploration and awareness. And so, yeah, that's why my coaching shifted from, again, it's the same sort of thing, hitting goals to actually, no, it's about a conversation where you get to know you, where where I'm helping you be more you, which again sounds like, well, how is that going to be the conversation of my life? But like that literally is your life, because then we're making the fundamental shift from, oh, my life is about jumping through these hoops. It started in school, I was jumping through academic hoops. Now I might be jumping through financial hoops or, you know, house size hoops, but it's the same game. What I'm saying is, let's examine the nature of the game.
Yeah,
is the game you're playing fit for purpose? First and foremost, bearing in mind what you're saying you want. And if you ask anybody on the planet why they're doing whatever they're doing and you keep digging, eventually they will give you the universal answer, because I think it's going to make me happy.
Yeah, yeah. Is that so? My process with coaching, I do values, vision, goals. What's important to you? Where is it that you want to end up? And then you do the goals. Only when you understand that, why you're not, what I don't like the word why, but yeah, like what you're doing it for, your purpose, your values, create the vision. Okay, so and where do we want to end up? And then we do the goals and we develop the curriculum. We seem to have skipped those steps a little bit. So how does that sit then with parenting and being able to kind of like impart what you've learned and the lessons you've learned and the information that you've got to your children?
Well, I share what makes more sense to me now. And down the road, that might be the same, might be completely different. So down the road, I'll share what makes sense to me then. So, but what I won't be doing is going, well, my mom taught me this, therefore I must teach this. I won't be doing that.
And so how do you deal with like that inevitable bit, you know, when the kids start to question you?
No, that's good. In my eyes, that's good. Because yeah. I don't want my kid to be a duplicate of the idea that I've created in the intellect. And I'm not trying to fight for that. So when my kid questions me, I openly enter that conversation. Openly, of course. Because who's to say I'm actually right?
Is there a I'm kind of like, there's some times where it's just like, shut up, you need to listen to me because I said so, because I'm your father or whatever. Like, I've had it, I've said it, I'm not going to lie.
I've done it too, but every time I've done it, I've sat there and gone, is that actually like true?
Yeah, they got a point.
Or did I just say it because I wanted this conversation to end?
I'll send you a little clip someone sent to me yesterday, actually, the comedy show, the Asian guy on the telly, on the Mobeen. And he was getting grilled by his daughter, came home and said, oh, I hit this kid at school and I've been like excluded. And he was like, what have you done that for? And she was like, yeah, well, they were bullying somebody and I couldn't take it anymore. And I just like, you know, and I had to do something. And he's like, oh, that's brilliant. I'm really proud of you. That's the right thing to do. She's like, really, Dad? You're proud of me? Because now I've been... She basically then flipped it and he was like, he's just really confused. His child was then telling him how he should be parenting her. And I've just been there. I've got three daughters that, you know, that have just been going through teenage, various stages of teenagerism. And I've been there sometimes where you... And then they go, no, you need to almost parent me differently. This is what I was expecting, or this is what you should do.
And as I said, I'm not perfect. I'm not saying that I sort of haven't done that same sort of thing. But all I've seen from my experiences, when that openness has been there to allow the question and to actually explore the question together, because I realized that the question is simply a question.
Yeah.
It's not my child trying to make me wrong, or it's not my child trying to go screw you. My child is asking a reasonable question.
Yeah,
more and I've just found usually with reasonable questions, the most helpful thing we can do is try and answer them. And if we can't, be honest that we can't, and try and figure it out together. I just think that that's something that we can carry through no matter what phase of the parent-child relationship we're in, whether that's a 2-year-old or a 25-year-old coming to us with something like a relationship thing, to be like, this is what you should do. At that age, with that context, it's like, what? How do we know? all we can do is support each other to get to something that actually makes sense to us, right? And yeah, so I have these conversations with my children and with children in school all the time, where a child will ask me something, say, well, why, blah, 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 blah. And we talk about it.
Hmm.
Questioning is great.
If coaching, isn't it?
Yeah, asking the right without questions, the space for the question. Yeah, without the space for questioning, all we're doing is going, well, this is the right answer because I think it is, so I'm going to pass that to you. If nobody questions that, then it's passed without examination. Then the next person goes, right, I've got the right answer. And then they get asked, right, here you go. And that just carries on. Now, the thing is, if there's misconceptions in there, if there's stuff that's not quite often there, and nobody actually stops to look at it, that gets passed for generations. The questions are great. The questions help us together to, again, what I was saying before, chip away at that which is non-essential. And sometimes it's just a case of someone pointing something out for us just to see it and go, oh, yeah, actually, I never even looked at it in that way before. Hmm. So questions are great, and being questioned is great. And my hope is, you know, when my kids get to that teenage years, I would love it if they were still coming to me with questions and conversation. That would be amazing. We'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll see what happens. They might not. And it's that openness for me is the heart of it all, because we're not then being run by insecurities that we might be holding about how we're doing as a parent, which comes in.
The great moment comes when you actually go and ask your kids questions.
Yeah.
That's when you know you've made it as a parent, I think. You actually ask advice from your kids. They might have figured out something more than you. Brilliant. Listen, Sean, man, we're going to have to wrap it up. Talk to me a little bit about what you've got going on in your world at the moment, how people can engage with you and take part in coaching with you, or come in to some of your events or stuff like that. Just give us a little rundown of what's going on in your world at the moment.
Yeah, man. So as I said, I have my sort of roster of one-to-one clients who work with me, and how 99% of those things started was, you know, somebody saw me at a talk, or somebody saw me say something. They reached out on Messenger and Facebook and went, oh, I really liked what you said there. Or they came with a question like, what on earth did you mean by that? And then off the back of that sort of dialogue, you know, people sort of end up working with me. And so in terms of people reaching out to me, Facebook is a great place to find me, like Sean Brown, S-H-A-U-N, which is unconventional, and Brown with an E at the end, which is also unconventional. And there's a picture of me like pointing like this, like that was just kept. Yeah. It's the only decent picture someone's taken of me, like in a professional capacity for like 3 years. So I've just kept it. But that's me. And if you've got any questions, as I just said, I'm so open to questions. I'm so open to objections. I'm so open to the buts. I love all that because we're going into new territory together. So if anything I've said here has brought any of that up, and I'm not saying definitely to work with me, but if it has brought any of that up and you want to bring it directly to me, that's the best place to do that. I also have got an event happening on the 6th of July, which is coming up soon. I have a group called True Nature, which is a small private Facebook group where I post writing that's pointing in this direction that we sort of explored in this chat. And I also have Zoom calls happening in there twice a month where together we do the same thing. And I've got an event that's sort of off the back of that, how well that group's gone. I asked, you know, who's going to be up for an event last year? And more than one person said yes. I was like, I'm going to have to do an event then. And then that's happening sort of 6th of July. It's pretty much full, but there are a few places that somebody was really keen to come along. Again, for more information on that, best place to find me is Facebook. And just sort of, you know, get in touch and let's have a conversation. I've got my parenting webinars that are happening. We're on week 3 of 5. Yeah. And they're happening each week. And basically, again, same context. We've got a bunch of parents come together, me and another coach named Ali Scott. We're leading the conversations. And basically, we're really exploring, you know, what is the heart of parenting? So we're trying to, rather than going, here's how to be a good parent, which is what 90% of stuff out there is trying to say. We're taking it off the table, and we're not even worrying about whether we're good parents, bad parents. We're just saying, what does it mean to be a parent? And you know, what is the highest expression of that that we can sort of work towards? And we're having conversations around that's been really cool, really illuminating as well for all of us. So that's happening. And I think that's pretty much all I've got going on at the minute.
I think that's enough, man. I think you've got
a lot going on. When you're in your life, right, you think, oh, that this and that. But when you actually sit, I'm like, whoa, that's...
No wonder I need an afternoon nap every now and again. No.
I'm going to have one after this.
Listen, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that there's some stuff that I'd love to chat with you. There's definitely some opportunities for some collaboration. Now, I'm really interested in the parenting stuff you're doing. Part of the ideas that I've got moving forward about putting on events for guys for men and women, the separate but not divided, but a lot of that will center around parenting. So I'm always been on the lookout for someone with that sort of knowledge and skill set and understanding. From our conversation today, I think we're in agreement in most things. So I think it can sit together really well. Thank you very, very much for your time, Sean.
Thank you for giving me
a lot to think about today. I hope I've given you a couple of things to think about. And I really hope that all of you listeners out there have had something to think about as well, because that's the aim of this podcast, is to be the sort of starting point for people to have a little think or stop, a pause, and have a moment about the trajectory that they're on and their thought processes that they've got. So thanks for coming on board, Sean. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Modern Man Podcast. Again, if you want to engage with me or the Modern Man Club, you can find the Modern Man Club on Facebook and the Modern Man Coach on Facebook. Listen, Fidel Bohill, just type in Fidel. I'm pretty much the noisiest one you can find on there. You know, LinkedIn and everywhere else. So if you want to engage with me, you know where to come. We've also got another Modern Man Club session going on this Saturday, 9:30 at Bristol Fitness Gym, where we do our 45 minutes of self-defense and then 45 minutes of conversation in a men-only environment, which is it's been an amazing journey so far for the guys that have been involved. So thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you all again next week.